Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports, and I can confirm that's the Florida Panthers logo.
I'm Ryan Lambert from the NHL's Department of Lottery Fixing.
I'm Sean McAdoo, and I still cannot identify the Minnesota Wild logo.
And you're in Puck Soup. We are doing this, obviously, a little bit earlier, partly because Sean is getting some much-needed R&R, or I don't know, you're taking a trip or some shit.
I'm at my parents' house, so...
Oh, wow.
Expectations accordingly.
Yeah, I take the R&R back. Yeah. But mostly because, like, all of the shit that's happened in the last 24 hours requires Sean to be here. And he was going to be off the grid for the rest of the week. And we have to give the people what they want, which is Down Goes Brown commenting on both the draft lottery and the Maple Leafs' demise in a five-game series during a pandemic. Let's start with the lottery. It just happened about an hour ago as we taped this. Real quick, a couple things before we get to what happened. Very much enjoyed the conversation between Gary Bettman and Jamie Hirsch from the NHL Network, in which Jamie Hirsch made the mortal error of calling somebody a playoff team that was in the qualification round. So as we're at this momentous occasion where it is like the tippy top of drama. It is 8 lottery balls. The world is watching. It's so exciting. Gary Bettman has to begin the broadcast with a 25-minute fucking soliloquy about what's a playoff team and what's not a playoff team. So congratulations again to the NHL for this.
He got around a technicality.
Yeah, it's just insane.
Objection, Your Honor. All that.
We get then the Ernst & Young folks. Please remember them. Bringing out a briefcase. The briefcase is filled with 8 lottery balls, and I got to tell you, I was very excited when word came down yesterday that it was just going to be a bunch of balls, Gary Bettman, and a lottery machine, and that's how we were going to do this thing. And that's like the most exciting thing that can happen.
Yeah, it's the right way to do it. They actually, yes. God bless them, did something right for a change instead of overthinking it or just saying that we always do this behind closed doors, and so we're going to do it again. Like, they absolutely did it the right way.
Yeah, like, Ruby was over in the corner working on her job, but, like, she turned around and she was riveted. Like, she'd give fuck all about the NHL draft lottery.
Because there's no reason to do it behind closed doors, because, like, what's going to happen? Like, is the guy just going to drop one of the balls that happened? Like, that's – the odds of that are minimal, so you're fine.
So the lottery – began with the what I would call the presentation of the balls to Gary Bettman.
Please call it something else.
No, nope, that's the name. That's the official name. And the Ernst & Young guy, who is all face masked up, very good, social distance, all that, inside of the Secaucus, New Jersey studios of NHL Network, he shows Gary Bettman his balls.
Okay.
And then Bettman identifies each logo and lets us all know that that is in fact the logo of all the teams.
Right. Which, this was, but she gave him the answer. Like, she should have each one just held it up and been like,
yes,
"What team
absolutely.
Is this?" And there should have been like a few that were like the Kansas City Scouts and just see what he can do with it. Like, you can't give him the answer. The answer is going to be yes every time. She should have at least one time been like, "Is this the Florida Panthers?" And he'd be like, "Yeah." And she's like, "No, that's the Predators, man. That's sorry."
Yeah, and then you get him, he's like, that one's a man, that one's a woman, that one's a camera, yes. That one's a TV. Yeah.
Mr. Commissioner, what is this? Looks like it could be a bear, or maybe it's, I don't know, a wolf?
Yeah, this star looks like an eye, but it's also the, I don't know, I'm sure I could talk.
Can I see the, can you show me the rest of the animal? So they present, they show him all the logos. He confirms that they are all different teams, and then the every time he identifies one of the teams correctly, the ball handler, for lack of a better term.
No, I think you got it. No need, no punch you. Ups.
Thank you. Would then drop the ball into the lottery tube. Now, anyone who's watched Mega Millions or Powerball understands what we're talking about. It's the machine. It pops the balls around, and then there's a tube where all the balls are stacked up before they are released into the machine where they're all popped around. So he drops the ball into the tube. When we got to the New York Rangers, the ball slipped out of his fingers and fell into the tube. He had to reach into the tube to retrieve the ball before the logo could be presented to Gary Bettman. Now, Ryan, first, what was your reaction when you saw this happen? Keeping in mind, this was the only ball that slipped out of his hands into the tube.
I literally said to my girlfriend, who was watching it, vaguely interested, this is going to be, if the Rangers win, this is going to 100% be fodder for a conspiracy theory forever. And then...
Sean, how often do you think you'll be writing about this? Every year? Every 5 years?
Are you implying that I'm the sort of person who would take a topic and then beat it into the ground? Because I've never seen that. And speaking of not seeing things, Cary Fraser, 1993. Doug Gilmore gets high. No, you know what? Speaking of not seeing things, I'm here. I got family around. I literally missed this detail. I was watching the lottery, but I was looking away or something, and I missed it. And it was only later I was looking at my phone, and everyone's talking about this guy dropping the ball. And I literally at first thought that he'd like – dropped it like it had bounced on the floor and he had to like go chase it along the studio, which would have been even better. So I was a little let down when I saw it, but yeah, it's completely nonsensical, but I love that we get a conspiracy theory out of this and that we can just roll with and yeah, everybody's on the same page on this one, and rightfully so.
Right. And again, like, it's embarrassing that this guy accidentally dropped the ball, but in his defense, his fingers were probably frostbitten at that point from the Rangers ball. So he drops the Rangers ball into the tube, and then the rest of the balls go in the tube. And now we're getting – he presses the button on – the control. By the way, the control pad for the lottery machine looks like he's operating a fucking load lifter at the docks. Like, it is the
joke. He got that shit from Wile E. Coyote. Like, that was – it was the size of like a 13-inch old-timey TV. Like, it was gigantic. It had three big buttons. Yeah. Oh, man.
It's literally the device that a 1960s Bond villain uses to drop James Bond into a tank of sharks. Like, it's just fucking enormous.
Ernst & Young, you're mad.
So he presses the button, and now the balls are popping. Now, here's the question, Sean. Have you seen the footage captured by some industrious Leafs fan that shows the Leafs ball bouncing around in the suck-up part of the machine a split second before the Rangers ball gets sucked up into the tube win the lottery?
Of course. Okay. And this is the way that it goes. I mean, very famously, the Leafs were the – like three balls into the Connor McDavid drawing, they were the team with the best odds. I wouldn't expect it to go any other way. But I think, to my mind, that means the Leafs finished second. So if we have to disqualify the Rangers ball at any point after an investigation, that means the Leafs are in.
So the Rangers ball emerges from the tube either because it weighed less, or because it had magnets on it, or because it was filled with helium, or because it was frozen. And the New York Rangers claim Alexis Lafreniere they claim the pick that will enable them to draft Alexis Lafreniere. We assume that's what they will do. And they win the lottery. Real brief around the horn here. Who were we most happy did not win the lottery, Ryan?
Chicago. Oh, well, I guess they advanced.
No,
that's right.
Yeah, of the teams that could have the lottery. Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I feel like everybody you looked at everybody that apart from the Penguins. So maybe the Penguins, but I think you just looked at everybody and go, yeah, I guess they all kind of stink. That's fine, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, did the Penguins really need him? No. But also, like, I read Sean's thing today, and he said it would be good if the Penguins – and I didn't disagree. Like, it would be fun. But, yeah, I was just kind of – not really. Like, once Chicago was out, I was like, it doesn't really matter. They got it right.
Sean, who did you not want to win the lottery?
I mean, the team that I didn't want to win was Edmonton. Not so much because, oh, you know, they're good or whatever, or even the fact that they've already got McDavid.
Well, they're not good.
There's that too. I would love to see this guy playing with McDavid. I love the fact, the idea of a prospect coming in and getting to play on a at least playoff contending team with a star player on his line instead of going to some garbage team and having to just, you know, see in 4 years and maybe you'll be worth watching then. But no, Edmonton would have been a disaster just because they've won 4 times in the last 10 years. Well, they've had the first pick 4 times, 3 times because of lotteries. It would probably have been the thing that got us the gold plan, which maybe was a reason to root for it. But other than that, it would have been bad. I'm on Team Chaos. I would have loved to have seen the Penguins win. Obviously, I'm a Leaf fan. I would have loved to see the Leafs win. But of that big three group, Edmonton would have been the one that I think would have been the biggest mess. So I'm glad that didn't happen.
I agree with you on Edmonton. I would have been nonplussed about Pittsburgh. I didn't want him to see him go to Winnipeg. And I know Winnipeg is worthy. Like, at the end of the day, I don't want him to go to any team that would have been a playoff team under, like, traditional round of 16 rules. I'm happy that a non-playoff team...
Yeah, so can we shut up for once and for all with the lectures about the draft lottery is not meant to blah, 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 and all of this garbage we've had to hear? Like, a team that would have been in the bottom 15 won the lottery. Can we just all be happy?
Great.
It was a long shot. They would have had, but they could have won any other year. We can finally, I hope, put this stupid talking point to rest.
I'm happy that it happened that way. I would have hated if a playoff team had won. Winnipeg, you know, deserving through points percentage and all that. But like, look, I'm just going to speak to you as an American. You can close your ears, Sean. Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, Matthew Tkachuk, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes are all north of the border. We don't need to have another person playing, especially on a small market Canadian team that otherwise could be like a foundational player for like Pittsburgh or New York. So I've said my piece. Ryan, what... You mentioned Chicago. How do we feel about Montreal having advanced and not getting a crack at Lafreniere, knowing that they're going to be they're going to be trying to acquire him for the next 15 years?
It's extremely funny and great.
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, you know, I think the only thing you could really say about Montreal, like, beating the Penguins is that they really fucked themselves with that one. Like, they're going to get annihilated, I think it's fair to say, at some point in these playoffs. And you know, if it's even if they somehow win around because Carey Price continues to stand on his head, like, at some point they are just going to get balled up into a ball and thrown in the nearest garbage can. They're going to get destroyed. And so you're going to go, oh, was it worth it? No, probably it wasn't. When, like you say, you get the Quebec-born kid who, you know, he's going to be a superstar. He's the first really big Quebec-born superstar. Ooh, when's the last time, right? Like, it's...
Vinny?
Yeah.
I mean...
I don't know. It's so...
Yeah.
It's been quite a while, and they're going to... And that's a... Well, I mean, they try to convert him to center, so I was going to say they could use the help, but, you know... So yeah, I mean, it sucks for them that they actually won this this fake playoff round, but
yeah,
whatever.
But it would have been so much. This was a big part of, if people didn't see it today, I wrote a case of why I was rooting for the Penguins. It would have been so funny if the Penguins had won and the Canadians were
with that pick. Yeah,
was our spot, pick, yeah. And then they go and get swept, right. And you know, and we just, like, we would have been able to laugh at that forever. So that was the one part that was a little disappointing, because I feel like Carolina they've had a bunch of high picks lately. They're probably in the mode where they're like, no, we'd rather make a playoff run with this roster we have right now. So that was a bit – like the comedy potential here was off the charts, and we kind of didn't get a great alternative reality thing to point and laugh at like we would have with Pittsburgh and a couple other teams.
The one thing that is funny is everybody's like, oh, you know, this kid's, a, you know, 2 years, he's going to be a first-line talent, blah, blah, blah. Rangers kind of already have a first-line left wing.
Yeah.
not that, like, obviously you can never have enough talent on the roster and all that kind of stuff, but it's very funny that the one team that absolutely didn't need a left wing got one.
Top of that, though, dude, like, you're completely right, because not only do they have Panarin, but how much do you think they regret giving Chris Kreider a fucking run of like 4 or 5 years of his contract with a full no move now?
Yeah, well, that and, you know, the fact that they locked him in and the cap's going to be flat and like that maybe doesn't feel like the best decision either at this point. But yeah, I already half jokingly said it on Twitter, but they should trade down and take Byfield instead.
Yeah.
There's
a really good fit with the Kings. I know this is the NHL and nobody ever trades anything because then you might actually get second guessed. But the Rangers need a center. The Kings have some centers in the system.
They're good on center, yeah.
They could use the wing. The Kings have got a ton of other prospects. So, I mean, you can sweeten. You're not talking just going from 2-1. I mean, you're going to have to sweeten the pot. They can do it. There's absolutely a fit to be had there if the GMs have the guts to actually sit down and work it out.
Yeah, but again, that comes back to the essential cowardice of every NHL executive, which is they don't want to be the one that
Jeff Gordon's done
away.
Some stuff, you know? Like, he's one of the guys that I'm like, you know, maybe. I don't know if the Kings... Blake, I don't know as much, but...
I was going to say, like, if I think anybody might do it, it might be Jeff Gordon. Like if you're talking about it, who other than him would you really go, oh, I bet he has the balls to kind of take that big swing?
Yeah, there'd be a few guys, but there's not a lot. But I kind of like him. And, I don't want to get roped in because literally every year I talk myself into – and there hasn't been a top five pick traded before the draft in, like, decades. So it doesn't happen, but if it did happen, there's a fit to be had this year, and maybe the Senators too, right? You can get a center at number 3. They've got 3 and 5. So
Grigoriev, you know. Now you can expand that trade a little bit. Oh no, I that was a thought that I had. It would make sense to trade down
One in Georgiev for the 3 and the 5. Absolutely.
Yeah,
they should do it.
All right. I don't think they will, but
they should
if they did.
I think. I mean, Ottawa would be. I feel like they'd be willing to talk about that. Remember, French is a second language up in Ottawa too. So there's. It's not – he wouldn't be as marketable as he would be in Montreal, but for a team that needs some marketing right now, like really needs to put some behinds in seats when that's an option again, I'd be very open to that if I was Pierre Dorion, but who knows.
Mm. Interesting. All right. Let's move off the draft lottery. There's another topic you obviously all want to hear Sean opine on.
Which and that's the Calgary-Winnipeg series.
The sad demise of the 2019-2020 Toronto Maple Leafs. Yes. You always wonder, again, it's never a question if you're a Leafs fan whether or not they're going to lose. They all know they're going to lose.
Right.
It's how they're going to do it. What is the how behind it? And the how behind it was fascinating because – they blew a 3-0 lead in game 3. And so everybody was like, okay, the how is going to be it was 3-0 jokes and all that shit. But that wasn't a unique enough pain for the Leafs to give their fans. So then in game 4 against the Blue Jackets, they rally. from a 3-0 deficit, not just like any 3-0 deficit, a 3-0 deficit late in the third period when they tie the game with three consecutive goals with a goalie pulled and then win it on a fucking Austin Matthews goal in overtime on a penalty called on Foligno tripping Morgan Riley, getting the benefit of the call, everything's coming up Leafs, and then they fucking faceplant in game five. So yeah. That is the pain. That's the unique pain.
It's unique pain, and it's like as you're saying this, I'm taking it back. We recorded the last podcast like on Thursday, and all three of those games happened since then. It feels like already it feels like it was weeks of drama, but that was three games and four nights. I could only speak for myself as a Leafs fan. The Thursday night game sucked. It just confirmed every narrative. This is the first three-nothing comeback that Columbus had. Where the Leafs, they had been great in game two. They come out, they look great for half of game three. You're thinking, like, they might not just win this series. They might blow them right out. This may be, they're flexing now. They cough it up. They lose the game. Then you go into game four, and most Leaf fans are like, it's over. Screw this team. I hate these guys. They get off to the terrible start. They're down three. The fact that they had that comeback Friday night, I know I've seen some people say, like, that was just set it up to be even more painful. That, to me, took away a lot of the pain. A lot of the pain or anger or annoyance or whatever it would have been. It's not heartbreak. You're five rounds away from the cup. You can't be heartbroken. But I would have...
You're a Leafs fan.
I would have been a lot more miserable if they had just lost that Friday night game and then, you know, they would have coughed up the lead and then they come out with this terrible effort for 55 minutes and you're just, I mean, everybody had their pieces written about these guys. They're quitters. As soon as the going got tough, they got outworked, etc., etc. And then they pull off this miracle comeback. And look, the fact that they didn't win the series means that the comeback, it's a trivia question now. It's not like some monumental thing, but it was fun as hell. And if you're not going to win in the playoffs, give me something fun. They did give something fun. Sunday night then was a game where they played fine, not great, but also not so terrible that you could sit there and you know, break out all those same narratives and everything. Obviously, I wanted them to win the series, and it's disappointing that they didn't. We can get into like what that means and everything. But the fact that they had that crazy 5 minutes on Friday, actually, to me, that doesn't make it more painful. That makes it less painful because we got one hell of a fun game, at least, out of it that we're going to remember for years when it looked like, you know, they were just going to go with a whimper right before that.
Yeah, they showed a bit more backbone than you anticipated.
It's not even what they showed, because I mean, they showed it garbage for 55 minutes. You know, like they really and they didn't. It's not like then for the last 5 minutes they just dominated. They scored three goals on three shots. Like, you know, and the the Blue Jackets were hitting the side of the net with open nets and all that stuff. It was luck. But like I've said before, I refuse to accept this idea that when it comes to the playoffs, one team wins the cup and everyone else has to be miserable and everyone else has to be failure and everyone else has to, you know, be some of going to the playoffs. Yeah, you want your team to win, but it's also about like, what are the moments? What are the memories? What kind of fun stuff's going to happen? The Leafs surfed up a crazy fun memory out of that series, and I would rather have that in a loss then, you know, have some boring loss where nothing happens and you're you've just got nothing to show for it. So, you know, and I'll tell you right now, I've seen people kind of say like, yeah, but that comeback, that got Leafs fans' hopes up. No, it didn't. No Leaf fan, no Leaf fan over the age of 10 was like, we're going to win for sure now. Like, that's not a thing. Like, we were all sitting down Sunday night when the first goal gets like deflected in off Tyson Berry. We were all like, yep, here we go again. Okay. Friday night was cool, though, so I don't know. We roll on.
Yeah. What was your take, Lambert?
Didn't see the big comeback on Friday. They scored that third goal.
Thank you for that. Thank you, GH, the first star of the comeback.
Yeah, I think we're going to be holding out this summer and hoping to get a nice big fat contract out of Kyle Dubas.
Well, everyone else does, so
it's worked so far. But yeah, no, who was it? Foligno scored the third Columbus goal on Friday night.
Jenner on the
it was Boone turnover. Jenner, that's yeah. Right. And I was like, fuck this! I'm going to take the dog out now. Then I get back, and the game's still on the TV, and I'm like, the fuck? It's in overtime? And our girlfriend goes, oh, I wasn't watching. I don't know what happened. Okay, well, great. That's fine. So, yeah, I it was a big surprise to me. I'll definitely say that. And then I watched overtime, and it was cool. And then they completely shit their pants in game five. And I would say about 5 minutes into the second period, I was like, this isn't fucking happening. It's over. They're done. The only goal they're scoring tonight is the one that went in off Barry. So, yeah, that held up. That was a pretty predictable turn of events there. You know, it's one of those things. Sheldon Keefe said it after the game. He's like, you know, I don't know. We just didn't get the bounces. We shot 2% in this series, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, if you if you shoot 2%, you probably should have done better than that. The Leafs should have probably won Game 5 by like 6 goals with how much they were pressing the attack, and but they weren't getting particularly close to the net, and you know
they should have never lost Game 3.
Well, like there's that. Just obviously
inexcusable to lose Game 3.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You can't let a team that has less talent on its first line than you do on your second line. Like,
Can I just tell you something? So yeah. I was on the Zoom call with John Cooper today, and I wanted to ask him about the idea that if the Lightning are going to be without some of their best players, could that change the mindset of the team and have them, you know, maybe play a different style, kind of commiserate with the blue collar style of the Columbus Blue Jackets? You know, it's like it's a grind. It's not relying on the flourish of the offense as the Lightning tend to do. It's kind of like, let's grind it out and score shitty, dirty goals and play like the Blue Jackets. My mistake was calling the Blue Jackets a blue collar team, because John Cooper spent the next 5 minutes explaining how they are not a blue collar team, that they're an elite talent team that plays a certain style of hockey. That was his summation of the Blue Jackets.
Okay, sure. Well, what their leading scorer have this year, points wise? Like, you know, it's,
but that's the style that they play, in his words. I mean, they, you know, Dubois and Atkinson and the whole thing.
Nobody on the planet is a bigger Cam Atkinson fan than I am. I think he's fucking unbelievable. Pierre-Luc Dubois, great young player. He had 49 points to lead the team this year.
Okay,
so. Yeah. You know, like, I understand that you can play a certain way and that's going to maybe, you know, play into your strengths or weaknesses or whatever. But, like, at a certain point, you got to say, even if you say their top line has plenty of talent, okay, then you get down to Boone Jenner, who, oh, everybody thinks he's really great. He had 24 fucking points this year. And points aren't everything. But, like,
let's be fucking serious, you and I agree, though. They shouldn't come back from a 3-0 deficit.
No, absolutely not.
You just can't let – exactly. Okay, so we agree on that. I think the Leafs lost the series in Game 3. Sean, let me throw some theories at you.
Can I posit a theory? Do we think it's because the Leafs have too many Iberian or Slavic players? Do we think that could have anything to do with it?
This is, of course, a reference to our friend Justin Bourne. Trying on Don Cherry's jacket.
That's some real Toronto media shit. Oh, I love it. Ooh,
the Nordic players that didn't show up for the series. Or
yeah,
game
and
five?
And Mitch Marner famously is from Sweden. I think is where he's from.
That's right. Marner with a umlaut over the A.
Look, as many a Leaf fan has said, if William Nylander was born in Canada, he would have been a very different player, and nobody bothered to look up where William Nylander was born. Please.
Was born. Exactly. Right. All right. Sean, a few theories. First off, the one put forth by Brian Hayes, one of the hosts of the Overdrive show on TSN 1050. Are the Leafs worse off now than they were 10 years ago? That was Brian's take today.
Oh, my gosh. So 10 years ago, like, as in, like, a few years into the Brian Burke era?
The 2010 Toronto Maple Leafs.
The 2010 Toronto Maple Leafs. No. Yeah, I mean the 2010 Toronto.
I'm
going to
pull that team up. Hold on.
That was the team that finished second last and didn't have their own pick because of the Phil Kessel trade. So they had sent it to the Bruins, who picked Tyler Seguin. So I'm going to go no on that
one. So you're saying? Hold on. Let me get this straight. You're saying
that a team whose third leading scorer was Alexei Ponikarovsky is mm-hmm. not as good as this team?
I mean, I you also have to factor in, you know, the coaching and the GM and the complete and utter lack of a farm system. But yeah, it's close. But I'm gonna say 2010 was better. Except, you know what the one good thing about the 2010 team was? It wasn't 2020, so they were much happier people back then. So maybe that's where he's coming from. Other than that, no, I didn't hear that segment, so I'm going to just kindly assume that there was more context to it.
Or at least enough context that makes sense.
Good Lord, I was around in 2010. I was writing without an editor in 2010, so you can go back and find my stuff then and see what I thought of those teams.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
Is Freddie Anderson better than Jonas Gustavsson? These are the questions we have to be asking. The fabled Gustavsson-Toskala pairing that we all miss so dearly.
An absolutely great segue. My next theory I wanted to bounce off you, Sean. As Steve Simmons wrote in the Toronto Sun, Frederik Anderson is a fine goaltender with a propensity to give up gut-wrenching goals. The anti-Grant Fuhrer, so to speak. Can you come back with Anderson for a fifth year after 4 years of first round eliminations, or will Dubas look to someone such as Matt Murray, who he knows hockey in the Sioux?
No fucking way he said that.
And who has fallen into disfavor in Pittsburgh? Sean, should the Toronto Maple Leafs ditch Freddie Anderson for Matt Murray?
That's a wonderful 200 hockey men take. That, like, just because they knew each other in junior, therefore he's got to be the guy. Look, the Freddie Anderson thing is he's got 1 year left on his deal. You can't extend this guy.
No, now. You can't.
And I don't mean now just because he gave it, because the second goal was bad. I'm saying, like, he's 32 or 33. You can't go give this guy, like, 5 years or whatever he's probably going to want. You can't. He makes, I think, $5 million on the cap, which is reasonable, but there's cheaper goalies out there. Where it is going to be interesting is what do you do? Because, I mean, your three choices are you can trade him. I don't see there being a market really out there for goalies with 1 year left on their deal. You come back and you have, like, a, for lack of a better term, a lame duck season, or you extend him. And I can't see them extending him. I hope they don't. I say that as someone, I like Freddie Anderson well enough, but you can't extend him. So I think you bring him back and you just go, this is it. This is your last year. And if he wants to sulk about that, then, you know, you just kind of roll with it. But that is going to be one of the many interesting things they got to figure out in the offseason. But I think the answer is he just comes back for one more year and then leaves as a free agent after next year.
What if they got Cam Talbot? What do you think?
I'm listening.
Well, I mean, the interesting name out there is Robin Lehner, right? Like, that's the one that you're looking at.
Yeah, but you can't.
Okay.
I mean, you're not going to be Robin Lehner. First of all, he was, you know, he had his ups and downs, including up through the Buffalo years, many of which were self-inflicted. He cleans up his life. He goes to the Islanders. He plays great. He hits free agency and is like, all right, where's my big deal? Nobody offers it. So he takes a 1 year. Like, he's not taking another 1 year deal, or at least he's not going to want to. Some guys who don't want to take 1 year deals are going to have to because of the cap being flat. But the Leafs can't, like, unless they can dump Anderson for nothing somewhere and then give his $5 million to Robin Lehner. Which, if you can do that, then yeah, absolutely look into it and bring him in on, like, a 2 or 3 year deal where you're not locked in. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's just not. I mean, the Leafs, you're gonna hear this a million times. The Leafs have no cap room at all. Like, they can't add a single dollar.
This is the
dollar.
First I'm hearing about this.
Yeah, it's subtle. It's subtle. You got to really crunch the numbers, but. But the team that was going to be capped out at $88 million turns out $81 million worse.
Do you think that Freddie Anderson is in the Evgeny Nabokov one bad thing will always subvert his team category, or do you think he's a victim of the defense in front of him?
I think Freddie Anderson is a good like above league average goaltender who did not have a good year this year. A lot of what's going on right now in Toronto is like people trying to furrow their brows and figure out why a team that was like a 100-105 point team for a few years took a step back this year, was on the way to being a 95 point team and should have been better. And if they were better, then they don't have to play the Blue Jackets. Maybe they don't even have to play anyone because they get one of the four buys and they're playing in the round robin. And everyone, what happened? Was the coaching? Was it this or that? If the goaltender was bad. This is what happens in the NHL. Your goaltender, if you've got a 920 goalie and he gives you a 910 or a 905 season, things go off the rails. And that's a big part of what happened with the Leafs. With the bad goals, Freddie Anderson does give up bad goals, and it's happened to him, unfortunately, in the Game 7s and now in this, which was a de facto Game 7. He doesn't have a great record in clinching games. I'm willing to accept that that can just be small sample size randomness showing up. But also, sometimes it in sports, something doesn't have to be true for people to believe it's true. And if they start believing it's true, then it kind of does become true. And if the Leafs are sitting there in a clutch game going, oh, Freddie's going to give up his one bad goal, just like he does, like that can change a mindset and everything. So it almost becomes a little self-fulfilling. But I like Freddie Anderson a lot. He's a good goalie. He could be good for a few more years in this league. It wouldn't shock me. I just don't think you can commit long-term to him. And also, he had a bad year this year, and every goalie does. Mm-hmm. It happens. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, but when your goalie has a bad year, you drop several points in the standings. That's how this works.
Well,
and that's why you got to trade for John Quick.
Obviously, right? Yeah. Or Martin Jones, because he's never had a bad year. Well, he's never had a good year. Wait, sorry, got the confused. Two more theories for you. One, it is all Sheldon Keefe's fault. Why load up the top line with your top players when obviously the rest of your lineup is struggling to score goals? Where do you fall on Sheldon Keefe's performance this series? Knowing that John Tortorella will yell at you if you do not support him.
Yeah, well, sure. But John Tortorella yelling at you is good, apparently, because he yelled at Pierre-Luc Dubois and then he had a good game and we're all like, yeah, that Tortorella. And Dubois sitting there like, I had something to do with it too. Like, I think I kind of played the game of my life. And they're like, no, man, you got yelled at. This is... Keefe was fine. Yeah, you load up the first line. You're having trouble scoring. You've got three dynamic offensive players. Put them on a line together. It worked to generate chances. When they didn't score, he broke them back up and put them, like, this is what we want from coaches. How often, it was the anti-Babcock, right? Babcock was the same four lines, rolling them. You know, nobody plays more than 20 minutes, and he never seemed to change based on what was happening in the series. Keefe did that. That's what you want your coach to do. Didn't work. It's not always going to work. This isn't easy. Like, you don't just go, I'm going to pick these three, and the hockey gods go, yep, you picked the right combo, here's a goal. It doesn't work that way. The one thing I didn't like about Keefe was, like, especially in the game three, the big comeback for Columbus, and afterwards he was like basically saying, I didn't like the game at all. We went out there, we had no plan. And it's like, dude, you're the plan guy. Like, you know that, right? Like, you're the guy who's supposed to have the plan. So if you say your team didn't look like they had a plan, that's not a criticism of them. That's criticism of you. So there were times he did look like a rookie coach, but he is a rookie coach. And I think he's a reasonably good coach. I do think he got outcoached by John Tortorella in the sense that, you know, Tortorella got more out of his guys than Keefe got out of his, but I don't blame him for the results of the series.
Yeah. Two things on that. One, of course, John Tortorella is going to go, hey, he did a great fucking job, because then you get to go, and I beat him. If you go, oh, yeah, he coached like shit. It was fucking terrible. Like, that doesn't help you. That doesn't burnish your image at all, right?
Yeah, it's the old pro wrestling thing, right? After you win, you got to sell it like the other guy's good. You don't make it sound like the other guy's garbage. You got to act hurt so that it looks like you actually did something.
That's Tortorella, exactly
clearly
right.
A pro wrestling guy.
Yeah, no question. Come on.
He loved IRS. He's like, I just like when they enforce the rules.
You should be running around with a fucking megaphone behind the bench with little blue jackets on it.
I don't know. Could he get a Pierre-Luc Dubois blazer turned around at the mall that quick? Who knows?
Probably not.
But the other thing to say is, I wanted to say earlier, Sheldon Keefe's up there going, oh, you only shoot 2%. How often is that going to happen? And it's like, true, but also like, that's loser talk. And yep. This is the way This is the way losers talk when they have losses. They go, well,
Two things. Sheldon Keefe, when he talks about luck and, you know, all of this stuff, A, he's 100% right, and B, good luck selling that in Toronto right now. That's
right.
That's not what anyone in Toronto wants to hear right now. Whether you're right or wrong, that's nobody wants to hear it right now.
By the way, I like listening to Sheldon Keefe press conferences. There's a sort of a strong John Belushi energy, like to his voice and to his like approach. Kind of like there's like a kind of like I don't fucking care kind of notion to his voice that I really like.
And when he smashes the guitar against the wall, remember?
Yeah. Final theory, Sean. Some very smart people that we respect, one of them being Chris Johnston, simply wrote in the aftermath of this 5-game series played after a 4-month layoff and a pandemic that the results indicate that the Leafs cannot continue to do this, that dramatic changes need to be made to this team that cannot defend. It may involve breaking up the core. What say you to the idea that the Leafs cannot come back with this lineup next season and that maybe one of their bright young players should be jettisoned for the sake of cap space and making the team better overall?
Yeah, so there's two angles to this. There is the idea of you can't bring back the same team because of optics, because by doing that, you bring back the same core, the same group. You are reinforcing the message that this is acceptable. You are reinforcing the message that this year was good enough, et cetera, et cetera. Which is, I don't know. I'm not a PR guy. I'm not a marketing guy. I don't know how you sell to the market or if you should even care about that. I do think there's a good case to be made that this whole play-in, playoffs, whatever it was so incredibly weird that we shouldn't draw any conclusions from it. In fact, I would say that if you were seeing something completely different than you had ever seen from a team before, I would just shrug that off. What we saw from the Leafs this time was pretty much exactly what we've seen from them time and time again. And that's where the concern kicks in. And that's where I think the other angle is you can't bring this team back, not because of optics or whatever, but just because that's not the right strategy going forward. And that doesn't mean they're not good. It doesn't mean you got to break them up because you've screwed it all up and you got to start all over. But these guys, and again, to hit the point, they were capped out at $88 million, and now you've got $81 million. And I was on board fully with the strategy of get as much elite talent as you can, pay that elite talent whatever you need, and go cheap elsewhere in the lineup. But I don't see how it's sustainable going forward with a flat cap. Like, they're losing Tyson Barrie, they're losing Cody Ceci, and Leaf fans are going to be like lining up to drive those two guys to the airport after how this season went. But that's two of your top six defensemen are going to be gone. You got to fill that. You don't really like Rasmus Sandin is going to take one of those spots, but you don't have incoming, you know, elite level talent for the blue line. You've still got a question mark in goal. You've still got the depth questions. There's pieces of the fourth line, or Kyle Clifford's going to go. Jason Spezza might go. There's no money to fill any of those spots. Like there just is. You've got Nick Robertson you're going to drop in on a rookie deal. You're going to have to drop other people in on minimum rookie deals. There just isn't a way to add or address any problems that you've identified unless you move some higher salaries. And you look at the salaries on this team, because they're so top heavy, you know, there's Freddie Anderson we talked about. Maybe you can do something with him. Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Janssen are both in the $3 million range. That helps a little, but there's no, like, that $3 million isn't going to get you a fixed blue line. You need more than that. After Freddie Anderson, the next guy's like Morgan Rielly. You're not moving him, obviously, because he's on his deal is a discount. And then you're to the big four. So
right,
it's you know, one of those guys. And again, it's not because you're punishing them. It's not that William Nylander sucks or Mitch Marner sucks and we got to get rid of them. It's that you're just sitting there going, okay, we made a calculation when we committed big dollars to these guys. And, you know, William Nylander, he didn't hold out, but he didn't report. We had the long protracted thing with him. He got a pretty good contract. Mitch Marner held this team feet to the fire and got not just a big contract, but the biggest contract for anyone at his position in the entire league. and Mitch Marner's a real good player, and he had his moments in this series. Is Mitch Marner going to be on a single heart ballot this year at all? Like,
no.
Anywhere? Not one.
No.
And he's the highest paid. No. He was the highest paid player in the league in terms of cash. He's the highest paid player in his at his position in terms of cap hit. It's not good enough. It was good enough when he was on his entry level deal. It was more than good enough. The guy was fantastic. It changes the equation. I think you absolutely are in a situation where 4 years in a row without winning a playoff round, nobody's untouchable. Nothing's off the table. Like, if somebody calls and says, I want to talk about Mitch Marner, yeah, you absolutely take that call.
Well,
and you see what's out there.
Hold my breath for that one, but
it may not happen.
Yeah, because, no,
or
Ryan, may,
or
Ryan's
for Nylander
point's taken.
Or for whatever. But you know, like, there's.
I've seen trade Marner stuff. Like, let's just look at the fucking reality of the situation. It's a flat cap. Also, teams have lost a fuck ton of money this year and will lose a fuck ton of money next year. And he makes $15 million, 14.3 of it in signing bonuses next season.
Which means
no
if you wait till
is trading
whatever,
for Mitch Marner.
Well, no, it means it though, but if you wait until the equivalent of July 1, whatever that ends up being, it means the Leafs pay all the cash on this year's salary. So if you have a team that has that is worried about the bottom line but isn't too worried about the cap, there absolutely could be a fit there. But put it this way.
No, that's a fair point.
But nobody's calling up and saying, I want Mitch Marner. Here's a package that is worthy of a 94-point player or whatever he was last year, because he was hurt this year. I'm not trying to knock his production this year, because he missed some games. Nobody's calling up and going, he's a 94-point player, so here is a package befitting a 94-point player. They're calling up going, hey, $10.8 million against the cap. Maybe we got room for that. We know you don't. Here's some spare change we found in the couch cushions in order for you to buy some cap room. There's no easy answers. Like, it's.
Do you think there's a possibility he gets moved?
I think there should be a possibility. I think it's unlikely for the reasons A, they're going to want to keep him if they can. B, there's not going to be a lineup out the door of offers that are really that you really want. But if it's not him and it's not Nylander, I don't know where it comes from. They last year they managed to make what they thought was a deal that was addressing a need when they traded Kadri for Tyson Barrie, and they got the Avs to eat half his salary, so he came in dirt cheap, and they got Kerfoot, who they thought would plug in for Kadri. I saw the logic in that at the time. I thought I liked that deal when it was made. Total disaster. Absolute bomb of a trade. Barrie never fit. Kerfoot was fine, but he wasn't anything more than fine. Kadri, you watch him in Colorado, and you're like, yeah, that's exactly what the Leafs need is in terms of that style of play. So just a disaster of a deal, and now Barry's going to leave for nothing, and you're going to have nothing other than Kerfoot to show for it, and Kerfoot's not that much cheaper than Kadri is. But that was the point being, they found a way last year. They had an asset with Kadri where people went, they've already got the two centers. He makes 4.5 or whatever it is. There might be a way to move money out, bring money in, and patch up the blue line. Like, there's no way to do that now unless it's one of those two guys. Because I don't think I really don't see any scenario where Matthews goes. And I don't think if anyone's calling up with $10 million in cap room, they're not going to be asking about a John Tavares who's 30 years old. They're going to want one of the young guys. So I really feel like those are the only places where it makes sense. So you're going to have to either seriously consider moving one of those guys, move maybe both Johnsson and Kapanen, in which case we're sitting around talking about how they've got no depth, and they start looking like the Oilers again, where it's like they two lines and then you just cross your fingers. Or you pretty much bring back the same group next year and say, you know what, we're going to roll again, and we're going to think we're going to get a different result. And maybe you do. It's like, this is hockey. Like, you can roll the same set of dice and get real different results when there's so much randomness. But man, that's going to be a tough sell. It's going to be a tough sell to Leaf fans. It's going to be a tough sell to just to the team in there. Like, when they get to camp and it's the same faces and they're going, oh, okay, I guess we're doing this again.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the Leafs. Listen, in the few moments we have left with you, give us one series that you have your eye on in the quarterfinals that you're kind of fascinated by.
Oh, man. You know what? There's some good ones. I St. Louis, Vancouver. I like that series a lot. The Blues, I think, can certainly be better than they looked in the round robin defending champs. But Vancouver's fun. Like, Vancouver's a really fun team. Obviously, the Philadelphia-Montreal series, we all kind of want to see how that plays out. Tampa-Columbus, man. Like, Columbus, they're a boring team. And I say that with respect as a guy who wishes my team was a bit more boring than they are. But that's a fascinating series. Like, talk about, I mean, imagine being Tampa. Like, this is it. Like, you want your redemption narrative. You get the exact same team that ruined you last time. But also, you're beat up. Guys were already hurt. I mean, can you imagine if Tampa gets out to like 2-0 lead in game one and blows it? They're going to be sitting there going, are you kidding me? This is going to happen again. I love the idea of the Columbus Blue Jackets just being like the psychological damage tour. Like, we're just going to go from team to team and reinforce every narrative about your team and just ruin psychologically and emotionally all of these teams. That feels like a very Tortorella thing to do. So, all of those and, everyone but Calgary, Dallas. That's the one. Yeah, I'm like, whatever. So that'll be the seven game classic.
Low event hockey. All right. Enjoy your parents' house. Are you in the basement right now, by the way?
I am. Yeah. Classic. Can you tell? Am I giving off my mom's basement vibe right now?
No more than usual.
Where I'm at. All right.
All right, Sean. Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Later, bud.
Bye, everyone.
Have a good one.
And we're back. Ryan, thanks for... did you take GH out for a walk while Sean was going on about the Leafs?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. I
was sitting here drinking a Spindrift, Greg. You ever have one of these?
I definitely have. They're very... Now, what is your favorite flavor of Spindrift?
Well, right now I'm really enjoying the lemon, but I bought recently the half tea, half lemon. That's real good, mm-hmm. too. That's real good.
Now... raspberry lime, you a fan of that or no?
No, it's too raspberry forward. I think it needs to be a better mix of each, personally. But
We like the raspberry lime and we like the purple drink as well.
Which one's the purple? That's like the blackberry or?
Yeah, blackberry.
Yeah, I haven't had that one. It's not a flavor that appeals to me. But
now you mentioned
one I should try out one of these days, I think.
You mentioned that while Sean was going into the cap implications of Alex Kerfoot's contract, that you may have something to say about the Leafs.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to say really about them is, you got to replace Cody Ceci in your top four. Cody Ceci shouldn't have been in the fucking top four in the first place. He's fucking awful. Did you watch that series? He was horrible. And, like, the rest of the team was good enough that it didn't, like, he wasn't, like, turning the puck over in his own zone or whatever you think of Cody Ceci doing. But, like, you know, if the best you can hope for out of a $4.5 million defenseman is do no harm, like, you know, like, it's a real fucking problem for them. And yeah, okay, maybe Rasmus Sandin is the guy to step in. Like, I don't know. I just think that, you know, he shouldn't have been in the top four in the first place. And, frankly, he shouldn't have been on the team. Like, everybody was kind of shocked when they pulled that trade off, and then Dubas was like, and we're keeping him. Everybody was like, no, you, Kyle, what are you talking about?
Well, they're going to get a little bit of help. They're going to get Mikko Lehtinen, who was the KHL defender of the year or whatever. He signed a pennies on a dollar deal. So they're going to have a little bit of help. But, like, look, you'll never find a bigger fan than me of Brendan Shanahan. I'm also a big fan of Kyle Dubas, and I'm a big fan of their approach to most things, but fuck, man. We got done talking about Jason Botterill a few months ago, and, like, you can't recover from whiffing on a Ryan O'Reilly trade and, you know, making some of the other moves that he made. The Tyson Barrie trade is going to go down as one of the worst fucking trades in Leaf history. And Cody Ceci was just a non-entity for them. And that's tough.
To be fair, it got one of the worst contracts in the league off their books.
It did.
Right? Like,
it did.
So there is that to say about it. But again, now, like, when they made that trade, everybody was like, and they'll flip CeCe to some fucking idiot team, right? And they were like, no, we're going to keep him in our top four all fucking year. He played like 21 minutes a night in this play-in round. So that sucks. You don't want to do that.
Right.
And you know, on some level that, you know, how many defensemen did they have on the roster, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
That they could use, I get all that, but like, I think, you know, that's a big fuck up by Sheldon Keefe, man. You can't play a guy who, I mean, look, has anybody ever been so perfectly encapsulated as to what they bring to the table than that shot where he had a pretty clean look at the net and he missed it by about 85 feet?
It was terrible.
Yeah, like, that's the Cody Ceci experience in a nutshell. Like, the only thing I guess you would say is that it didn't end up on the stick of a defending player and go 200 feet the other way and for a goal. Like, that's the only thing that wasn't part of the Cody Ceci experience on that play. Right. But
I'm not looking to make this Leafs talk. We already did, like, a fucking...
Oh, no shit. Fuck.
I mean, we're basically, like, a Sportsnet affiliate at this point. But listen... I don't want this conversation about their cap hell to be without at least mentioning that the Nikita Zaitsev contract that you referenced was Lou Lamoriello contract, and that the Patrick Marleau contract that they had to deal a first round pick to get rid of, also a Lou Lamoriello contract.
I feel like that Zach Hyman contract was a Lou Lamoriello deal, right? Am I right about this? So,
just an FYI,
Frank Anderson. Walked into him for another.
All right, listen.
Hey,
you've made it clear that you don't want to make picks. I'm not going to ask you to.
Well, it was just last time. Like we just said we were going to preview it, and then you were like, "Oh, and here are all our picks." And I see.
Do you feel comfortable making picks this time? Then
a little more because So here's what happened. Nobody said, "Oh, you're going to make a pick." And right now, I don't have an editor who's like, "You got to make a pick, the thing you hate doing." So I fucking didn't do it. And it felt, Greg, honestly, incredible.
I'm sure it did.
It felt really good. I
don't understand not making picks. You know who else doesn't make picks? In your defense, is Elliot Friedman doesn't make picks.
Yeah, smart guy.
Yeah,
knows what's up.
But I mean, he does it because he doesn't want to piss off his sources. What's your excuse?
My excuse is all it does is it gives. For example, remember when you were like, "Oh, nobody's going to get mad about what picks you make." Some fucking guy. The second the Rangers get eliminated, oh, Sebastian Aho's not as good as Artemi Panarin, and it's like, man, fuck this. Like, it sucks.
But the ultimate irony is that people get pissed off that you didn't make picks. So
yeah,
even
people are
withholding your picks people pissed off.
Right, well, I think it might have been you made a point to call me a coward on the show. Didn't help matters. And I don't care. Whatever. Fucking. But I did make picks. So that this time people wouldn't get mad at me for making picks.
Listen, I was trying to, like master motivators like John Tortorella, scare you into making picks by calling
you. Well, it fucking worked.
There. All right. Good. You make picks on the series that you care to make picks on.
I did. I filled out a bracket on NHL.com this morning.
There you go. So. There you go. Flyers and Habs. The Canadiens obviously shocked the Penguins. What did you think about the Penguins' demise, by the way?
They looked like dog shit, didn't they, Greg?
Boy, they looked slow and old and slow, didn't they?
Yeah, and guess what's not changing next year? The only thing you would say, obviously, is much like the Leafs shitting their pants in Game 3, like the Penguins fucking didn't even try to correct the mistakes they made, or Mike Sullivan, I guess, specifically, apart from, now we're in an elimination game, we'll put in this guy who's never played a fucking playoff game in the NHL before. But otherwise, we're going to stick with Matt Murray and fucking Jack Johnson forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, I mean, you know, I know Jack Johnson's a favorite of some local radio hosts in Pittsburgh, but he
like
got cratered.
Sidney Crosby? I didn't know he had a show.
No, just got cratered in that series. Just embarrassing.
Yeah, they look fucking awful. And, yeah, I mean, look, whatever. Jack Johnson, I can't remember what the stat was, but Jack Johnson was on the ice for the majority of their goals, and I think he averaged, you know, like 18 minutes a night or something like
and
that.
And honestly, like, I thought having Jack 16, Johnson in the bubble...
16.
I thought having Jack Johnson in the bubble would be pretty cool. Like, you could kick your shoes off, he's got his guitar, you sit around the fire pit, he's playing those surf songs.
That's right,
it's pretty great.
Yeah. But then on the ice, yeah, not so good.
He's fucking cooked, and there's only, I think, 19 years left on that deal. So,
at a great cap hit, though, let's be
honest. Oh, yeah. A bargain basement for a guy who can't skate anymore. He's 33. Well, you know. Did you fucking know that?
He's been around for a while. Remember, he was traded. What was it? What trade did he go in? The fucking Jeff Carter trade, right?
Yes, that sounds right. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around forever.
Yeah, no, right, he definitely has been.
I'm taking the Flyers in five. That's I understand that. Carey Price was incredible in that Penguins series, especially early on. But I do think that life changes a little bit. The Flyers, I think, have more of a net front presence, and
you don't say.
Yeah, I think they're going to make quick work of the Habs here, and I do love the passing of the torch aspect of Carter Hart playing with or outplaying Carey Price in the series. Flyers and five, few teams in the league right now playing better than Philadelphia.
See, I know everybody's saying that, and obviously they look fucking great, but like I feel like that was them going, this is our fucking chance, boys, here we go, and then everybody else in the round robin who's like, yeah, we've been through it. We're like, you know, like they were the eager puppy, and the other teams were like, we'll get there when we get there. Did you watch that fucking Boston Washington game on Sunday?
Yeah, that was
two teams that did not. That was some senioritis. Nobody
levels
wanted to
of
be
don't
there.
Give a shit.
Yeah,
I the Flyers. I agree with you. It's like in Mario Kart when somebody times their acceleration at the start of the race perfectly and gets that extra boost. But then they don't know how to do the slidey curve thing to keep their energy up, and everybody catches up. That could be the Flyers, but
yeah,
I think they'll wax the Canadians here.
Of course, they're a good team, but like I think what I'm saying is, I guess, is drawing conclusions from the round robin. I wouldn't do it if I were you.
So, here's the thing with this other series we're going to talk about: Lightning Blue Jackets. I'm picking the Lightning in seven.
Six here, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Now, why do you like them? Because honestly, to go back to your
soliloquy about... They're the most talented team in the league, Greg. That's why.
But to go back to your soliloquy about not wanting to make picks, I pick them to win the cup.
Same.
I have to pick them at every series in order to maintain that path and that trajectory. Yeah. There is a part of me that doesn't believe they're going to win this series because they are so shorthanded. And the Blue Jackets, it's the same fucking scenario as last time where the Lightning are like, oh, we should play real games. And they go in the round robin. They're not real games. And then the Blue Jackets, the only fucking team to go to a game five
right.
in the qualification round. Yeah. So now, like, 48 hours later, they're playing this team that just, like, is just straight out of the
chute. They're humming. Absolutely.
And so it's the same shit as last year. But I think that this team, in a lot of ways, is so built to win a series like this. With the addition of guys like Pat Maroon and Blake Coleman and Bartley Gaudreau and like the little mucker grinder guys down the lineup that you need to win a series that they didn't have last time.
Sure.
But I am very concerned about, you know, they're going to be able to throw Jones and Werenski at whatever line Kucherov's on, and there's not going to be a fucking Victor Hedman to make sure that the only offensive guy you got to worry about on the Blue Jackets in Dubois isn't, you know, checked into oblivion. I'm a little bit worried about that.
Yeah, I mean... You don't want to lose your Norris caliber defenseman, I think.
Yeah, it's a rule.
Is what you would say.
Yeah, it's a rule. Yeah.
And you would probably also want the guy who's like a pretty reliable 30 goal scorer. One time he scored 60.
Yeah.
You'd want probably him on the lineup as well. But, you know, like, I think that at the end of the day, I think they have too much talent to lose whatever, a maximum of 8 playoff games in a row to this team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like,
right. Yeah.
If you, okay. Last year's different because obviously they've made some changes to the roster. People are hurt. People are not hurt, whatever. But if you put a team as talented as these two Tampa teams up against a team as, let's just say reliant on systems, maybe you want to say, as mm-hmm. Columbus is, mm-hmm. it's really tough for me to see a scenario where they lose 8 out of 11. You know, like, yeah. that's just how I kind of view it. And like I said, I think in friggin' October, me and you both said Vegas and Tampa in the cup final. And yeah. I didn't really see much from either team to go, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. Like, I think other teams have made their case that they are as good as those teams, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I got to pick Tampa.
Yeah, by October you may mean July, but at the same time...
Well, no, I'm saying, like, in October, I said, I think it's Tampa and Vegas, and then I had to maybe rethink that in July, and I stuck with Tampa and Vegas, and now here we are in mid-August now, saying the same thing.
Craig Custance, our friend from The Athletic, did his I'm going to talk to an anonymous executive and scout and coach that probably contributed to his book, and got picks for every series. So I should, as we go along, mention all of them liked Philly. The executive said 6, the other two said 5. And all of them liked Tampa, 6 for the coach, 6 for the executive, and 7 for the scout. So you and I are simpatico with these individuals.
Yeah, no, like I said, Tampa and 6.
The Washington Capitals against the New York Islanders. Again, one of the reoccurring themes of this quarterfinal round, I can't believe how lucky the NHL is sometimes in the way this shit works out. Now, it may just be the incestuous nature of hockey that every series has some sort of storyline connecting the two teams. But we go from the Blue Jackets having swept the Lightning last season to Barry Trotz taking on his old team in this series for the first time. The coach says the Islanders in 7. The executive says the Washington in 5. The scout says Washington in 6. Greg Wyshynski says the Capitals in 6. What did Ryan Lambert say?
Caps in 7.
All right. Listen, this is my own theory. I know there's a lot of people like with the Barry Trotz revengeful Wanda kind of thing here in the series against the Capitals. Do you know how many people on the Capitals want to fucking destroy Barry Trotz and his
team? Oh, my God. Yeah, of course. Of course.
They hated playing for him. There's probably like 70% of the roster hated playing for him. Then there's like 30% of the guys that got their shot because of Barry Trotz are like, fucking bully. He's a great dude.
Well, there's also
most of the Capitals hated this guy.
Well, there's also just, you know, if you have a coach and he moves on and he makes another team instantly look pretty fucking good, you want to go... We're way fucking better than those assholes, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you don't want to make it look like, oh, we won the cup because of Barry Trotz. You want to go, oh, Barry Trotz won a cup because of us, and we'll fucking prove it by beating the Islanders. Basically, I have Caps in 7.
And I also think that, you know, the Islanders' power play actually in that series against the Panthers, I don't think was all that good. And then like in the
regular season, it looked bad.
Good. And I mean, you know. I don't expect there to be a lot of penalties called. I think they stopped calling penalties right around the end of Game 5 of the Maple Leaf series.
Oh, I was going to say Game 4 because they were like, oh, we shouldn't have called that one in overtime. Right. So we're not going to call any in Game 5.
Again, not to make this TSN 1050, but the Leafs were flopping around like the goldfish at the end of the Faith No More video in that Game 5. They couldn't get a damn call.
Yeah,
they couldn't get a single call in that game. Marner recreated the Bobby Orr photo at one point in that third period, and they couldn't get a goddamn call.
No, they were like, you got your one important call. We can't give you a power play in game. Or more than one power play in Game 5. That would be crazy.
Anyways, if the Capitals get their chances on the power play, I think they're gonna win this series pretty handily. I say in 6. And also, like, I know that you are the least big of a fan of Braden Holtby, but he's a real good playoff goalie.
I think he's done now. Like. Broadly speaking, but I think I was one of the very early people who was like, I think this Holtby kid's got something when he was, you know, like 23 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
the coach says Boston in 6. The executive says Boston in 7. The scout says Carolina in 7. Greg Wyshynski says the Carolina Hurricanes in 6 over the Boston Bruins in the 6-versus-4 series. What does Ryan Lambert say?
I gotta go with the Carolina Hurricanes in 7.
No! You and I both like the Canes.
They look fucking good.
I think the thing that people aren't recognizing, one, the extraordinarily big amount of – a large amount of education this team got last season in how to play playoff hockey and the kind of defense you need to play to win in the playoffs. And the other thing is you just need one line in the playoffs. That's all you need.
Yeah, ask and the Bruins have last year.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So with the ascension of Andrei Svechnikov to becoming a star, like they're going to – that's all you need. And they're going to be fine. Carolina in six outgo the Bruins. Of the two finalists from last season, I think that they are the one more likely to be able to flip the switch, as it were, after the round robin.
Totally agree.
But I think Carolina is going to win this series. I think they're ready.
Totally agree. I thought you know, obviously, what did the Bruins score? Like 3-4 goals that whole round robin. Like, that's a fucking problem. Like, no, I don't want to get into, like, the, you know, you start gripping your stick a little tight or whatever, but it's like, it's already hard to score in the playoffs, man, you know? And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. for the Bruins to have to flip a switch to, oh, we need to actually start scoring that many goals, like, in one game a lot of the time. Yeah. That's a real problem, and you know, obviously they have the best line in hockey on paper. It didn't really work out that way in these last three games, and I think the thing that's very interesting, well, apart from the fact that Zdeno Chara looked like he had aged about 16 years over the last 5 months, was you know, everybody said coming in the older teams are going to take a little longer to get it going. They got to get the older legs turning. This is a big disruption for their routines, blah, blah, blah. I kind of felt like that actually held true, you know, like all throughout all of this. Is it just felt like the older teams just didn't have that extra quarter of a step, and that ended up mattering in a sport where there's a fucking shitload of one-goal games.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and especially like, and again, remember what the Blues and Bruins did? They played all the way to the final game of that season,
yep.
And then they played a regular season, and then they stopped, and then they were off for 4 months, and they came back.
Yeah,
that's not easy to do, man. That's a lot of hockey stop and
start.
A
lot of gear shifts there. But yeah, mm-hmm. like I said, Carolina, how fucking good did they look against the Rangers? Holy shit!
Yeah.
They were just like, you guys should not be here. Pack your shit. Get the fuck out of the bubble. This is embarrassing for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, and I guess enjoy your draft lottery win.
Indeed. All right, moving over to the Western Conference. According to Craig's people, Vegas Golden Knights against Chicago Blackhawks. I guess first off, as we've kind of skipped over some of the teams that were eliminated, mainly because they're not really all that interesting, your thoughts on Edmonton getting solved by the the skeletal remains of the Chicago Blackhawks dynasty?
Yeah, it was. Look, when you're a one and a half line. Look, okay. I guess the thing to say is that Tippett, like, brain geniused himself out of. Oh, we had like the best line in hockey for a pretty good chunk of the season there. Let's break it up. What
insane.
The fuck's he thinking?
Absolutely.
Why would
insane.
He do that?
And you're talking Draisaitl, Yamamoto, and
Nuge.
And
the Nuge man himself.
Right.
Yeah, the
and
Motor
he played,
City
he
mad
played,
man.
He played Nuge up with McDavid in that series, broke up that line, actually broke them up before the end of the pause of the season, before the pause for some fucking reason. Crazy that he did that, and
he also started Mike Smith in game one, but you know, I think you're allowed one mulligan on that, especially as the Edmonton media was so fond of saying Mike Smith has the highest save percentage in NHL playoff history. I feel really bad for Connor McDavid. I really fucking do. And you know, like I made the point on Twitter, and Oilers fans got very mad at me that, like, when he's off the ice, they don't fucking score, and when he's off the ice, they get scored on a lot more. And you know, they were like, well, that's only true because you know, he doesn't kill penalties. He only plays on the power play, and so that's going to skew your numbers. But like, I want to say last year, last year, not this year. They weren't that great at 5-on-5 when either he or Draisaitl was on the ice because they don't play defense. But like the last year, he was like plus 25, minus 80 something, I want to say was about the number on off at 5-on-5. And it's like, oh, I think it's because the team is really shallow and bad when he comes off the ice. And if Draisaitl's not producing. So, you know, Draisaitl produced all year. And they love saying, oh, well, they also had the second best penalty kill in the league this year. You think that's going to hold up? Like, is that a reliable thing for next season? I'm not so sure.
Now, the last thing on the Oilers and Blackhawks, you are somebody... And I am somebody, maybe to a slightly lesser extent, but by no means am I innocent in this, that has called out the Canadian exceptionalism and overpraising Jonathan Toews. Your thoughts on the series that he had against Edmonton?
He was fucking great. He shut down.
He was great.
You can have a great series at whatever 30. What is he? 31? Not even. Like he's
might be. Yeah.
We think of him as being extremely fucking old, and because you know, I mean, he's been around. This was his I think 12th or 13th year in the league. What was he? 07. He came. He was a rookie, right? So yeah, he's been around forever. But he's 30. I just looked.
Yeah, it's
32.
It's funny you should say that because Toews and Kane did a press conference today ahead of the quarterfinals, and it was the first time I looked at them, and I'm just like, this is so weird because I remember when they were really young, and in a lot of ways, Toews kind of looks the same a little bit.
He does. Yep.
Kane doesn't. But it was the first time I looked at them. I'm just like, they kind of are looking a little bit like. When, you know, Kiss is still squeezing into the leather.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
You know, by the way, speaking of which, I saw a lot of people, we'll table this for after the playoff predictions because we've got to talk about Dale Tallon too, but.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So let's continue.
So the coach says Vegas in 5, the executive says Vegas in 6, the scout says Vegas in 6. Greg Wyshynski says Vegas in 4. What do you say, Ryan?
Yeah, Vegas in 5. You'll never ever get me to pick a sweep. It's just it's this fucking sport, man. Like Jonathan Toews can have the game of his fucking life and have like 5 points or whatever, and you go, okay, sure, it happens. You know,
I don't care. I always feel pressure to pick a sweep. Shoot your shot. If there's going to be one series where I'm going to do it, it's going to be...
This would absolutely be the one to do it.
The Vegas Golden Knights buzzsaw, potentially with the former goaltender of the Chicago Blackhawks, who they said, sorry, we're choosing Corey Crawford against them. Fuck, man. I think this could be a quickie, is all I'm saying.
I agree. I just hope Pete DeBoer doesn't talk himself into, well, Marc-Andre Fleury has the experience and blah, blah, blah. If I'm a Vegas fan, I don't want to see that dude come out of the crease or come out of the bench for any reason other than to say good game, Robin, as he congratulates him coming off the ice.
There's a part of me that's worried about that, but there's also a part of me that knows A, Pete DeBoer has absolutely no loyalty to Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, he has no reason to. Right, absolutely.
B, Kelly McCrimmon, the GM. Kind of doesn't have any loyalty to Marc-Andre Fleury, or else why do you add a goalie at the deadline, the caliber of a Robin Lehner? This wasn't let's bring in Jack Campbell to support our starter. This was, we're really worried about our starter, so we're going to bring in this guy in case he fucks it up. So I don't think that I'm not that concerned about there being kind of like this default Henrik Lundqvistian loyalty to Fleury. In this situation, so I'll take in Vegas in 4.
Yeah, that's fair.
Colorado Avalanche against the Arizona Coyotes. This is the only series where the goaltender for the underdog gave me pause, even more so than Carey Price, because Darcy Kemper was so goddamn good in that series against Nashville that this was like I'm picking Colorado in 6.
Same.
But I was a little bit concerned about A, the kind of defense that Arizona can play, and B, how incredible Kemper is in that system. But I do think Colorado's just got enough to get by it somehow.
I don't think you have to say somehow. They have, I think, probably the four best skaters in this series.
Mm.
Right? Like legitimately, do they not?
Well, I mean, Michael Grabner.
The Grab Man himself. He had a great fucking series. He's really good.
You mean guys that can skate like side to side and stuff, not just like up and down.
That's right, yeah. I don't mean okay. like speed I got skaters. I mean, like, guys who play the outfield, as they say in
yeah,
football.
If that's the case, the two best skaters in the Western Conference playoffs are Tobias Reeder and Michael Grabner. But you're saying, like, right. do more than that.
Yeah, okay. I want them to, like, be good with the puck on their stick and
gotcha.
Play defense and all that kind of stuff. Which the Grab Man, less so.
Reasonable request.
Yeah.
Dallas Stars and the Calgary Flames. I went back and forth in this one a lot. This is going to be a series of low event 2-1 games.
Yeah, I went back and forth between and zero interest in this series.
Yeah, me neither.
Dallas and 7, why not? Who gives a shit? It's
yeah, I took him to 7 as well. The coach tells Craig Dallas in 5. The executive says Calgary in 6. And the scout says Dallas in 7. I picked Dallas in 7. Your Ben Bishop pitches a shutout, and Joe Pavelski gets the game-winning goal special in Game 7. The only thing that gave me pause about the series is that if it's going to be one that's really played low-scoring and it's like played to the a 2-1 low event kind of game, or even a 1-0 low event.
That really suits Dallas's top line, the way they freaking played, right, folks?
It suits Dallas in a lot of ways, but it also is a situation where, like, I don't expect Monahan and Gaudreau to do anything in a series like that, but the Tkachuk line could. And that's what gave me pause. Like, if Cam Talbot can be as good as he was in the first round with them, I mean, okay, granted, like, they knocked out the fucking, a shell of the Winnipeg Jets because they were missing Scheifele and Laine. But, like, if he's good again and he at least matches the level of a Ben Bishop, like, the Tkachuk line could easily just, like, score 2 goals a game, and that's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave me a little bit of pause. I was torn on this one in a very big way, but I ended up taking Dallas just because I think they're gonna be able to play to their tempo and eke out enough offense to beat Calgary.
Yeah, that was what they did under Bonus all season. So why change now?
Right. Okay. Finally, this one's interesting. Maybe the most fascinating series of the quarterfinals. The St. Louis Blues against the Vancouver Canucks, a Blues team that looked, I mean, not just disinterested, but horrendous.
Yeah, they look
in the round robin. Horrible possession numbers, horrible offense, and maybe most alarmingly, outscored 6-0 in the third period of games. Like,
I'm not going to put a lot of stock into that.
I am, because even if you're trying to just get your systems in order and play like scrimmagey games and shit, like, it's not like they're swapping out the goalie in the third period. Like, you should be closing out games. And they were really bad in the third period. Vancouver, meanwhile, has what we like to call in the business proof of concept. A terrible first game against Minnesota, and then lo and behold, this young core of players figured out what the fuck to do in the playoffs and beat what is without question a superior defensive team to St. Louis in a series of 4 games. The coach says St. Louis in a sweep.
Oof.
The executive says St. Louis in 5. The scout says St. Louis in 4. Greg Wyshynski, because he is blinded by his admiration of the Vancouver Canucks, says the Canucks in the upset in 6. And what does Ryan Lambert say?
You got it, Greg. You nailed it.
All right. It's kind of scary that we're in line on these.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think me and the scout picked the same team for every single one except that series. I might be wrong, but yeah, I mean, look.
But are you the scout?
You can tell me. No, I'm not.
Blink twice if you're the scout.
No. Is that the freaking... No, that's the fan. What's the scout? The scout is the Albert Brooks movie, right?
Right. With the fan is De Niro.
Yeah, I almost said I'm like freaking Robert De Niro. Okay. But no, that's a different movie altogether.
You've got the scout with Albert Brooks and Brendan Fraser, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Is he the
He plays for the Nye Yankees. That was a movie that they showed it on the plane when my family went to Disney World when I was like 9 or 10 years old. And so I saw that movie going down and coming back. It is like somehow deeply ingrained in my memory, but I don't.
And then you've got The Fan, which was Robert De Niro.
And Snipes, the Snipes man himself.
Wesley Snipes was a ball player for, I believe,
the San Francisco Giants.
Giants, right. And then De Niro was the obsessed fan. And I'm just checking this now. Yeah, a Tony Scott film, right, because it's oversaturated colors and everything else. And it's De Niro and Snipes. Okay. And then the Big Fan, which was a really good flick, was with Patton Oswalt.
Patton Oswalt, yeah.
As a basically a – he was kind of a combination of a WFAN caller but mostly a Jim Rome caller where he had like his speeches written out before he hopped on.
Yeah.
And that was a really good flick if you haven't seen it.
Big it's fan. Fine.
I'm a big fan of Big Fan. Yeah, but I'm a bigger fan. But I'm a bigger fan of Young Adult, the movie that Patton Oswalt made with Charlize Theron, written by
Diablo Cody, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Meh.
It's a good movie.
Not a big Diablo Cody enjoyer.
Well, Juno was good. The body Jennifer's Body, I'm sorry.
Jennifer's
was
Body,
not good.
Yeah.
Not good. Do you know Diablo Cody wrote the book for the Jagged Little Pill musical? To go back to previous episode and Broadway shows he didn't know existed. No, there's a Jagged Little Pill musical.
I knew that, but I did not know she wrote the book for that.
She did.
It's a big no thanks for me.
Okay. Yeah, one jukebox musical I forgot to mention last week was, as a kid, I went on a class trip to see Movin' Out, the Billy Joel musical.
Wow.
I know, right? It's pretty fantastic. Movin' Out. Billy Joel's songs, almost like musicals in their own right. They tell little stories, Billy Joel's songs.
That's true, yeah. Rich Guy Springsteen, we call him.
So I picked the Canucks in six, and you picked the Canucks in six. Why do we both like them? Is it because we think St. Louis is a little bit off their game at this point, and Vancouver's coming in with some confidence, or
I think,
or does speed beat truculence?
Well, I think for the most part, and this is what I said last week, I think is that I just kind of believe that the more talented team is going to win early series. You're maybe still figuring it out a little bit, blah, 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 whatever you want to say. But when you get a guy who, when he goes, oh, I have the puck on my stick, I'm just going to do an amazing thing with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can carry the day. I would say the more talented team, like talented quote unquote team, won every series, but, the Columbus series, obviously. And maybe you would say Arizona, right? But otherwise it was like, oh no, the team that had the most talent just kind of kicked everybody's ass. So that's why I'm going with it. I think Vancouver is just a little bit more high end talent. So,
yeah. I just want them to win. I'm excited. I wanted them to advance and keep playing hockey. But not like advance to the point where a Canadian team wins the cup, per se. Just like do well enough to maybe get to the next round. That's all.
Yeah, sure. Because they would play Vegas in the next round, and we both know how we feel about where Vegas is going. So
yeah, and also that'd be a really, really fun series.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, my God. That's
super fun series.
That's the one I really have circled on my calendar for the second round. For sure.
You know, I've seen some people, and mostly, like, the Steve Simmonsons of the world, lament the fact that, like, all these stars ducked out of the first round. But, like, fucking, the NHL doesn't give a shit about stars.
How many times have I said nobody cares about fucking hockey except as far as their team is concerned?
Or like, their city's team. Like, if the Flyers go to the Cup final,
everybody
it is
going to
be
flips
all
out.
Of,
yeah, of
Philly watching that series because they wanted to see the Flyers win the Cup for Philadelphia for the first time since 75. They don't give a shit how famous Claude Giroux is. Nobody gives a shit. It's about the team. Same deal with the fucking, you know, the NHL is very happy right now because they cooked up a playoff system that kept the Flyers, the Bruins, the Capitals, the Vegas Golden Knights, a team in Denver and St. Louis alive. And plus they also got Chicago, and plus if the Islanders ever did make a run, they got the Islanders. So they're fine. They're okay with goddamn Connor McDavid not being in the next round. Would it be great to have him there? Sure. But ultimately, especially in the U.S., they don't need Edmonton in this
thing. That's right.
That's the harsh reality. And that's more of an indictment. It's a double indictment. It's an indictment of the NHL's ability to grow stars, which they can't. And it's an indictment of the U.S. sports fans' consumption of hockey, which is that they are slavish to the logo on the front and not the name on the back. And that has been the case since forever, since Gretzky retired. That's been the case.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, just so we're clear. You wanted to talk about Dale Talon.
Well, I think it's worth talking about. So obviously had to happen, right? Like, he did a terrible job for about a decade. and more than that, though, their cap situation is fucked. They're going to need to cut payroll. Who's taken these contracts off their hands, you know? They're just like, they're gonna do the thing where, oh, we talk to everybody we could conceivably talk to about becoming the new GM, and it's gonna be either a guy who's an assistant GM in the NHL who everybody said is gonna be the next great GM, or a guy who has already been a GM. Those are your options. So, if you look at their cap situation, like, they got to re-sign Dadnov, they got to re-sign Mike Hoffman, or, you know, let them walk, I guess.
Right.
But that's about it. Mark Pisick's coming off the books. Brian Boyle's coming off the books, but he's making less than $1 million this year. Mm. And Eric Hall is coming off the books, and he was, like, fine for them, I think, this season.
Right.
And you go, oh, well, they have such an exciting, like, young core.
Well, he was fine. He was barely there this season in Florida, right. But he was fine. He's a fine player. Like, he's just fine. Okay, fine. Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, they got that young core, and it's like, Craig, how old do you think fucking Jonathan Huberdeau is?
He's got to be, what, like 26 now?
He's 27.
Oh, Jesus.
And, like, he just turned 27, but he's 27.
Yeah, like, so, Mike Hoffman was one of the better acquisitions by Dale Talon. He's like 30.
Yeah, he's 30.
Yeah.
Dadnov's good. He's 31. Brett Connolly's locked in for another 4 years. He's 28. Eric Hall, a guy I don't think of as being particularly old, he's closing in on 30. He's 29. He just turned 29 in March, but, like,
Aaron Ekblad
and a half now, yeah.
Looked like he was 24 when he was drafted, and now is actually 24.
Right, and he's also not as good as people think he is, and hasn't been for years. Keith Yandel's 33, Anton Strahlman's 34, Mike Matheson, another guy you think of as being relatively young. No, he's 26, and he's signed forever. Sergei Bobrovsky's 31. Like, this is not a particularly young team, and This is the real point of concern for them, I think you would say, is that, they have a nice little talent pipeline because the computer boys are good at drafting and all that kind of stuff.
Woo.
But I read multiple things this year about, like, hey, how come, like, they never develop any AHL talent? And then I looked at it and I was like, oh, they really fucking don't. Like, they either get guys who come to the NHL from Europe or junior, but if you have to go through the AHL... You're not gonna like be an impact player for them, and that's really bad. It seems like if you're trying to be a budget team, you know, like you need to find guys who can contribute for you on cheap contracts,
right?
Such as guys coming out of the AHL, and they haven't really developed too many guys out of their AHL system for a while. It's mm-hmm. really weird.
Yeah, they're a weird team. I do wonder if Joel Quenneville will have any input on who to bring in, considering they're turfing his guy.
Yeah, and, I don't know.
I mean, he's like one of the most highest paid employees of the team.
Probably at this point, probably the most, right? Apart from maybe one of the players or two, but.
And if it's not going to be Eric Joyce, and it sounds like it won't be if he didn't get the gig, he's the assistant GM there.
Yeah, they're conducting a thorough search, so.
Perfect. So what does that mean? Because if it's a thorough search and you're Vinny Viola and you've already bought in Joel Quenneville to be your coach, which means that you believe in the prestige idea, you want to bring in a proven winner to take over your team. I mean, is this not a spot where you're going to end up finding a slightly used Ray Shiro or dare I say, Dean Lombardi? Or even maybe a Ron Hextall, potentially,
yeah,
in this spot?
It's – well, like I said, you know, their mandate now is to cut payroll. Do they want to pay a GM to, like, fix this in the next 3 years? Because I don't think you can if you're going, well, our revenues aren't going to exist, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, and, you know, you have to cut – I don't know what the number is. But let's say it's $15 million off the payroll. Get you down into, like, the high 60s or something like that. Where are you going to do that? Half the team has fucking no moves.
Right.
Right?
Well, listen, so, like, I they're in a pickle. And I will put the name out there into the world, because I always do when there's an opening. Bill Zito, assistant GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Give that man a job.
How about
He's really good.
How about this? Hear me out. Kyle Dubas. What do you think?
I mean, listen, if they really wanted to do this, go fucking poach Tulsky from the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Fucking, you know? Computer Boy Central down there.
Yeah, go full Computer Boy. All right, we're going to end this episode with a little pop culture, because, I mean, what's the point in not having Sean here and not doing some pop culture?
We There's talked about over... the fan for 45 minutes, Greg. What more do these people want?
Sorry. There was a holdover... there's a holdover question from last week to do an overrated, underrated, and I kind of liked it. I'm going to give you two choices.
Okay.
They're both movie-based, because Sean, as we know, has only seen 6 movies. One, Tim Hanton says Harrison Ford movies.
Ooh.
And then Dan Straight Edge brings Matt Damon movies. So which one do you want to do?
I have no preference. What do you want to do?
Let's go Harrison Ford movies.
Okay.
You oohed at that. Yeah.
Let's say,
no,
though.
No franchises.
No. Well.
Wait. Okay. No Star. Okay.
No,
right,
Star Wars.
Ahead.
No,
I know
Indy.
What you're gonna say. Right. No Star Wars. No Indy. Right.
because
you want to keep.
What's that?
Blade Runner on the table, and want to keep the Jack Ryan movies on the table.
I don't. You can keep the Jack Ryan movies. I'm good with that.
Okay.
But,
I'm just saying. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Good. Overrated. Easy one for me. I've said this for years, and people get mad at me. Blade Runner.
You know,
style over substance.
Well, I was just going to say, I saw somebody say the other day on Twitter, 80% of whether a movie is good is how well it's shot, and, like, if it has weird colors a lot. And that's certainly true of Blade Runner. I think... Here's what I would say of Blade Runner. It is a situation where the theatrical cut is not nearly as good as all the cuts of it that came later.
Right.
Right? And so if we're leaving all the cuts of Blade Runner on the table, I think you cannot overrate the, like, final cut or whatever the one that came out in, like, 2007 or 8 was. I don't know what they're actually calling it.
It's an extraordinarily beautiful movie. It is extraordinarily influential. It has an all-timer performance by Rucker Hauer. There's a lot I like about it, but it gets praised as a classic.
It's a classic.
And I don't, but I think it's only a classic in the sense that it was influential, not in the sense that it's actually like a well-made film. It's boring.
I can see the argument that it's boring. The argument that it's not a well-made film is insane to me. I've never heard such an awful thing that anybody said.
Well, I mean, you have the visuals and you have the concept and you have the narrative and the execution. And I think that, like, you know, just like it's just like 2001. Like 2001 is an impeccably made movie, but it is a sit.
It's a sit,
as they say. Yes, I find Blade Runner to be a sit. And that's why I think it's overrated.
Okay, I'll give it to you. I don't totally agree, but
that's fine.
Okay. Overrated, because I think a lot of his movies that are properly rated, most of them being quite bad. I gotta really think here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do people think Regarding Henry is any good? Because it sucks.
You can say that's overrated, sure.
Like, I honestly don't know what people think about that movie. No, you know what? I'll say this. I'll say American Graffiti.
Is overrated?
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's definitely good, but it's also very, very, like, in a way that Blade Runner is maybe 15 years ahead of its time in terms of, like, mm-hmm. how it looks and everything. American Graffiti is exactly, whatever, 1972, the mm-hmm. movie. You know, and obviously it's set before that, I'm pretty sure. But it's, I watched
right.
that
it's
movie and I go,
hot rods and greasers and shit. Yeah. Yeah.
I watched and that movie so and I go, okay, this was, I can tell you exactly when this movie was filmed.
Right. And I think, you know, there's a movie that came out around that time or maybe a little bit later called Diner that Barry Levinson did.
Yes.
And in both cases, it's like, you know, American Graffiti launched George Lucas, made him then the guy that made the Star Wars movies. And then Barry Levinson became a very important filmmaker later on. And those are the two movies that we look back on and say, this is where it started. And that's why they're important. They don't really hold up all that well, I don't think. But at the time, they were probably important. But I would agree with you that American Graffiti is fondly recalled for what it was, but maybe doesn't play all that well, you know, in 2020.
Sure.
I agree. Underrated for me would be, I'm going to give you a kind of an off the wall one. Morning Glory.
I don't know that I've ever seen it. I know it exists, but that's, I think that's the end of my expertise.
Morning Glory has a really, like, as everyone knows, as Harrison Ford's gotten older, his, commitment to roles has been varying.
Oh, is this the Morning News one?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I did see that. Not good.
It's good. I liked it. It has got – it's him and Diane Keaton as warring morning news hosts.
Well, we love Diane Keaton.
Yeah, and he is – and it's got Rachel McAdams as the harried producer. He's really good in it because he's essentially – like his gruff curmudgeonliness is put to use as – like if you pictured like Dan Rather being told you have to go do like cheesecake morning news – segments on the Today Show.
Yeah.
It's that. It's right. Basically like the super serious news guy has to go do stuff on like, okay, next up, who's got the cutest kitten at the kitten show kind of shit. And it's great for that. And he's really good in it. And I find it to be like a piffle of a movie. I mean, it's a New York movie, so that earns points. But his performance in it is really good, and I found it to be charming. It's a charming movie, Morning Glory. What's your underrated Harrison Ford movie?
I think this is one of the best thrillers of the 90s, and I don't often hear – like, I think it is a well-regarded movie, but I think it's, like, unbelievable, and it doesn't maybe get that much credit, and it's The Fugitive. 1993.
Come on, that is not an underrated movie.
You don't think
The
so?
Fugitive is a fucking classic.
Okay,
I protest.
Okay, great. Oh, then
because not to skip ahead, that's my favorite movie. Like that's it's a perfect movie. It was an Oscar-nominated movie.
Was it really? Okay, fair enough. Okay,
yeah, that's fine. It's great.
Okay. Okay, well, then let me change it. There are a few... There were a few pretty good Harrison Ford movies. You know what? You ever see K-19 The Widowmaker?
You know, that's much better. That is an underrated movie.
It's a good movie.
Harrison Ford surrounded by semen.
That's right. And that's that was another classic. I'm going to look up when U-571 came out. But that was another classic. Like they put out
Dante's Peak volcano situation.
In the span of like 14 months, they put out two big submarine movies. But like, and U-571, I think, is better overall. But like K-19 The Widowmaker, pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah, I like that.
That's good.
I like that movie. Now, granted, I haven't seen it in a million years, but I liked it at the time. That's for sure.
My favorite Harrison Ford movie outside of the franchises is The Fugitive.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Let me hip you to this. Nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which it won for Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah,
Best Picture.
He was
Best
so good.
Picture.
He was so good in that movie, they gave him a spinoff. That's how good Tommy Lee Jones was in that movie.
Imagine an action film like this. Imagine, like, The Bourne Identity being nominated for Best Picture. Like, that's essentially – this is, like, a big summer action movie without, like, a crazy ton of CGI outside of the train crash, if that was indeed CGI. And it got nominated for Best Picture, Best Cinematography, Best Sound, Best Film Editing, Best Effects, Sound Editing, and the music score from – James Newton Howard. Just a fucking stone cold classic. It's one of my favorite movies. It is a, without question, drop everything and just start watching it whenever it's on. That's my favorite. What's your favorite Harrison Ford movie?
This is a bit of a cheat because he's not particularly high on the call sheet, you would say. He's not he's not in a ton of it, but it's The Conversation. It's one of the greatest fucking movies ever made.
Oh, yeah, without question. Yeah. Conversation, for those who don't know, was it Francis Ford Coppola?
It's a Coppola film. Not the first time they worked together. Remember, he was in like one scene in Apocalypse Now at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He's barely in it, but like I think it's one of the best movies ever made. It's fucking
cool. Yeah. It's Gene Hackman is Harry Call, who is like a guy who's like a.
He's a spy.
Surveillance guy. Yeah, he's a surveillance guy. And the great sort of theory on this is that Gene Hackman is essentially playing the same character unnamed years later in Enemy of the State.
Right.
With Will Smith, which is a great movie theory, and I buy into it. My least favorite Harrison Ford movie of all time... There are some bad ones. Like, Hollywood Homicide is bad. Firewall is bad. There are some movies that you're just like, why is this man in this movie? But no movie, I think... Yeah, and speaking of cash and checks, no movie has disappointed me more than the highest of high concepts. And in a movie that definitely had a pretty decent pedigree to it, Cowboys and Aliens was terrible.
And, you went to see a movie called Cowboys and Aliens, and you were like, "This could be
watched."
Good. Come on,
a man. Movie on like streaming at probably not streaming at the time, but like fucking cable, whatever. Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, Olivia Wilde, you know, a bunch of like character actors. Paul Dano's in it, directed by Jon Favreau, and a screenplay cooked up by. The Alex Kurtzman, Robert Orci, the guys who did like a lot of the Damon Lindelof stuff. And speaking of which,
you're not selling me on this movie with much of this information.
I mean, I'm sorry, Orci and Kurtzman are the ones who did the J.J. Abrams. I meant to say J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Oh, the guy who ruined Star Trek and Star Wars. Yeah, I love that guy.
And then Damon Lindelof was the guy who also did the screenplay, who I know is a huge favorite of yours from your admiration of Watchmen. Cowboys and Aliens is a bad movie.
No shit.
High concept is shit, but not good, and that's my pick. What is your least favorite Harrison Ford movie?
It's Star Wars Episode IX, The Rise... No,
Oh, how dare you.
An unwatchably bad film.
That counts because he was a ghost.
I understand, but we said no Star Wars, and so the obvious
Or was he a ghost?
No, he was his freaking memory, remember?
Yeah.
The obvious answer for this is a movie that I would never see, but looks truly, truly bad. The Call of the Wild. 2020's own. The Call of the Wild. To the extent that it totally, like, I think is just acknowledged by him. I did this for money. I needed to pay off something or other. And, like, he... Again, like, this is a guy who's been in some really fucking bad films. I just pulled it up on...
I looked over... I was on a plane recently flying back east, and somebody was watching that on the plane. And even on the small screen of the plane, the CGI of that dog looks so fucking terrible.
It's so bad. It looks so bad. And, like, you know what... I do love – the thing I love about Harrison Ford is that you can tell on camera he doesn't give a shit. And when it's Indiana Jones and he's being, like, casual about it, or when he's Han Solo and he's, like – like, the whole gimmick of that character is that he doesn't give a shit right up until the moment he does, and then you're like, oh, that is amazing. I love it. Like – even in the Jack Ryan movies, like, I don't think those movies work because he kind of gives off that attitude, right? And he can shed it every once in a while, like in The Fugitive, but, like, they're, especially later, like, post-2010 Harrison Ford, you're just like, this is a bit rough, you know? And, like, this one just feels like, you gotta call it, right? Like, you can't do it anymore, man. You get a... As much as I love a Harrison Ford movie, you just can't do it anymore. That has to be it for his career. He can't keep doing this to audiences, I guess.
Right. All right. That's Pucksoo for this week. I apologize to anybody who likes getting this show later in the week and is like, what am I going to do now?
Well,
because it was important to get this out. But here's the good news. Ryan and I will be back on Thursday for a fresh mailbag that'll drop either Thursday or Friday. And that'll be exciting.
Yeah.
So you can get your questions in and get them answered on the Patreon. Also on the Patreon, obviously, Ryan's newsletter. The much anticipated Taco Bell article will be up at some point soon from me.
Yeah, okay.
This is at this point, it's like Dr. Dre's detox album. It'll come out eventually. And enjoy all over on ESPN.com. We've got tons of previews and picks and all kinds of shit for you. And then also, I got a really cool story dropping on Wednesday that I don't want to give away, but you can look out for that. Anything else you want to add?
No. Enjoy the playoffs. Whatever. That's fine.
Yeah, now that it's actually the playoffs and not simply... just the postseason.
And, oh, you know what we didn't talk about? And it's, I don't know if it's still the problem, but when the NHL announced all the start times, did you see this?
Yeah. No.
Once you started getting into game fives and stuff like that, it was just, like, they just clearly had placeholder times on there, but everybody was like, hold on, the Canucks Blues game starts at 11 p.m. Pacific? And they just had it on there for like all night, basically. Like the second the Leafs lost, they flipped a switch or something and had it all scheduled. But they had a bunch of games starting at 2 and 3 a.m. Eastern. And I was just
fantastic.
Like, they're gonna fuck it.
I've been saying for weeks, man, that like these games sound like the double IHF games that you turn on at 3 a.m. as far as like the sound of the crowd and the audio quality.
That's
and shit.
Certainly
so,
true. Yeah,
yeah. So it's just fitting with the overall theme of the playoffs. But enjoy it. It's fun. Obviously, come back and yell at me and Ryan when our picks are wrong because they're very similar.
Don't though.
Don't
want to hear
okay.
from it. Yeah.
Our thanks to Sean for speaking on behalf of Leafs Nation, and our thanks to the NHL for freezing their lottery ball before drawing it.
That was
so
fun.
We had something to talk about. Yeah. All right, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.
See ya.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Box soup.